Hey there, and welcome to episode number 26 of Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach. This is a best of episode of the podcast for the last 5 months. So we get to hear from some of the artists that have been on previously and get their favourite tips, some stories about how they started playing, some stories about their bands. So it's a great little breakdown of some of the podcasts that have been on so far this year. Now, I was going to take a break in January in 2018, but I have had a few emails and messages regarding a few questions about guitar and some of the guitarists on the podcast. I will be doing some short podcasts over January to keep the weekly podcast happening. Also, there is a possibility I might be interviewing Ron Bumblefoot Thall from the band Sons of Apollo. Also, some people might know him from his time with Guns N' Roses. So I'm going to start this podcast off with my very first guest, which was Bill Leverty from Firehouse. Do you have any tips for people wanting to start playing guitar now?
Yeah, so I think if you're first starting out, what worked for me was a nylon string guitar because it didn't tear up my fingers so much. I got frustrated when I was a younger kid trying to play on a steel string guitar with really high action, and I couldn't get any of the notes to come out. I couldn't play a chord really well. But if you can get, take it to your guitar repair guy, get the action lowered, and if you can start on a nylon string guitar, it's a lot easier on your fingers. You're still going to build calluses, but and you can play with a pick. That's what I did. But you have to work on keeping the guitar in tune a little more, I find, with a nylon string guitar, because those strings stretch a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I think that, if you can learn chords first, all your major chords in first position, then you learn your minor chords in first position, and then learn the minor seventh chords in first position, and the seven chords, or the dominant chords, in first position, and then learn bar chords, sliding them up and down, the E position bar chord, the A position bar chord, the D, and then later the G chord, how to slide that one up and down the neck, and then the C chord, sliding that up and down the neck. Once you learn those things, that list of things there, you can pretty much play any rock and roll song that's ever been written.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I mean, there's of course a few that are different, but you can learn hundreds of songs once you just get that much under your belt. And so I think that if you get those basic things under your belt first, you'll have a lot more fun, because instead of just working on things that are arduous tasks of trying to do things that aren't any fun, you can immediately start having fun and playing guitar and having a good time. And that's really what it's all about.
Phil Sobrano from the K Sobrano Band.
Nowadays, I don't get time to practice as much, but when I do, it will be not playing what I already know. Mm. It will be practice in trying to learn or trying to do stuff that I can't do.
For sure.
I guess that's a good saying. It would be practice what you can't do rather than what you can, because if you've already got it down, I don't think you're going to get a whole lot out of just playing the same old stuff that you've been playing for years. So that's just my little tip on practice.
Yeah, that's very true. That's a good point. James Nilsson from the number one guitar learning app in the world, Musician. So there might be a lot of people listening at the moment that haven't really heard of Musician and how it works. So do you mind just give like a brief description on how it all works?
Yeah, so I think of it basically as like an interactive music coach. So it's an app that you'd play along with on any device pretty much, and it listens to you play, it gives you songs to learn. You can upload your own songs and practice whatever you want to practice as well. But you can also go through and learn from a full syllabus. And it's available for guitar and bass and ukulele and piano. And yeah, the idea is that it should help teach people to play effectively. It should help motivate people. It tries to make practice fun and engaging and motivating, which I think are really some of the core issues with learning an instrument for a lot of people, that it's hard to know what to do. It's hard to find good resources, and it's hard to stay on track. And so that's what Musician is designed to do.
Brett Garsett from the John Farnham Band. Plus, he was also in Nelson, Planet X, and toured with Paul Stanley from Kiss on his solo tour. So would you have any tips for any upcoming guitarists, one to learn now, or even just to get into improvising more at the advanced people?
My recommendation would be, it's kind of like, especially to a younger person, it's kind of like eat your vegetables in a way, It's yeah. like, and learning to read music stuff. I used to say this to the guys at MI a lot.
Yep.
Because I'm still a very poor music reader. I mainly survive by ear and that sort of stuff.
Yep.
And I said, look, fellas, you're paying all this money to come to this school. And I know you all just want to rock out and shred, but, work hard on your reading. It's why you're here, like everything. And, the amount of rock guys who would be in my room, and you'd hear Scott Henderson at the end of the hallway. And they're going, so, this guy, he's pretty good, huh? I said, oh, yeah, he's very good. I think you should go down there and sit in his room, I say to them, I know you love rock, but go learn from the jazz guys, get as much information as you can, be the sponge, and you'll only regret it when you leave. So, to any young players, I know your teacher's forcing you to read music, or I hope they are, take it on board, learn it now. Get it under your fingers. You will never regret it. It'll be one of the greatest assets to your life, and it won't affect your ability to be a rock god or write songs or anything like that. It'll only help it.
Yeah.
So that's my advice. Yeah. Listen to your teacher. Take it on board. Get it done.
Russell Morris, who is an Australian iconic legend. Now, as far as the songwriting, when you do your own songwriting, do you just try and keep the simple chords just to start with, and then you might add to it later on?
I try not to make things too complicated. I used to in years gone by.
Yep.
I really try to keep songs quite simple chord-wise, because I think the secret is maybe in the melody. The more complicated the chords get, you tend to follow the melody into these dark corners if you're adding... Some guys are great at it, but I'm not. I can't sort of add augmented chords or minor thirds and all that sort of stuff. And the melody tends to get lost for me. I tend to follow the chord and sing the main. It's best for me to keep it rudimentary and to explore where the boundaries are for me in the melody sense. In that chord, and not... if I all of a sudden throw a fourth in, I'm probably going to sing the fourth. And I don't really want to do that I try not to,
That's good. Ian Archibald from the Ian Archibald Band. Now, would you have any tips for upcoming guitarists?
Yeah, definitely. Look, it's just commitment and just practice, and try and look at practice as not being a chore, but being something enjoyable. And ironically, these days, because I have such little time, is that I actually find myself wishing I could practice as much. When I first started, I was doing an hour to 2 hours nearly every night, and I just loved every second of it. Although there was stuff that I couldn't do, or I was finding, it's kind of like a relay race, is that you get to a point, you go, I can't go anymore. And so, I can't get past this part. And then next thing you know, next week, you've got past it, and that feels like it was so easy. And then the next one feels like the hard part.
Mm.
And then you get past that. And so it's just that progressive sort of overload where you just... And then you look back like a year later and go, wow, look how much I've learned. Look, what used to be so epically hard is now I don't even think about it.
Yep.
And so it's just enjoying practice and finding a good teacher that sort of inspires you as well, and just doesn't sort of go, oh yeah, here's this, here's a photocopy out of a book, it's like they'll listen to you and go, what songs do you want to learn? Okay, why do you want to learn that? Oh, because you really like that riff. Or maybe we'll just learn the riff, you don't necessarily have to learn a whole song, if you just really dig that riff, learn that riff, you know, and then move to the next song, eventually you'll end up with a whole song, but it's just a matter of just continually going for stuff that you like. And if it's, you know, too hard for you, but you really like it, you're going to work harder to want to learn it. So that's what I find, as opposed to going, here's a sheet, you know, get to that point and then go to the next point or something like that. Yeah, so that'd be my only tip. Is just find something that inspires you and try to pursue it and keep going with it.
Steve Janeski from the band Radio Sun and also Black Majesty. And when you practice, was it mainly on electric or acoustic, or you'd swap it around?
I learned it, first of all, like I started on acoustic, but in all honesty, I wanted to just, you know, play electric. So I didn't really stay on the acoustic that long, maybe, you know, a couple of weeks, and then I went over to electric, and I loved that because, you know, a lot of my favourite bands, they were on electrics, and, you know, just to be able to try and imitate your favourite artists, you know. And in the beginning, it was, even though I write my own songs now, in the beginning, all I wanted to do was play my own songs, you know, copy my own favourite songs and learn how to do that. That was the whole aim in the beginning. And then after that, you know, I sort of had the itch to, yeah, do my own stuff and, you know, play in rock bands and stuff.
Jennifer Batten from the Michael Jackson band and also Jeff Beck. So did you play with Michael anytime after that tour?
No, it was just all of his solo tours. And when he was gearing up for the thing in London, he was going to use Orianti. Well, the Aussie.
Yeah.
So obviously that whole thing blew up and didn't happen.
Mm.
But I mean, I never took it for granted that after the bad tour, he was going to ask me back again. Yeah. I thought, well, he's got a group of people for one tour and then a new tour with new faces. And so each time I got asked to go out, it was like, oh, hell yeah. It really is like a paid vacation.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was a fan of his music anyway. And to be part of it, be part of something that huge, was amazing. And I remember George Lynch was in Japan, maybe in the bad tour, and he came and saw one of the shows. And he said, God, it must be amazing to be part of a tour like this. And it kind of stunned me because I thought, well, you're in a big band that's hugely successful with Dokken. And it really set the perspective because in reality, that's a whole different level.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael, just for costumes for the bad tour, spent $1 million. You know? Yeah.
That's incredible.
That doesn't happen too often.
Yeah.
The very amazing, very wonderful Jeff Acheson.
And do you have a most popular question that people ask?
Yes, the most common thing is, okay, I know my blues pentatonic scales. I know how to play, but I'm just bored with my playing. How can I make it more interesting? I'm just sick of hearing me do what I do.
Yeah.
That's the most common thing that I get, and I completely understand it because I suffer from it myself sometimes. And I think most players do. And it's one of the things that drives musicians to continuously learn. It's one of the reasons why it's a lifelong pursuit to be as good a musician as you can possibly be. You know, the amount of music there is to listen to is never ending. You know, it's absolutely infinite. You know, you'll never hear all of what there is. And if you've got a passion for it, you'll keep looking and keep trying to hear it. And so as a musician as well, you know, you're always hearing things that you don't know how to do. No matter how much you practice, you are still going to hear somebody play something or a piece of music that you can't comprehend how it was done. And that spurs you on to learn more. But that's the most common thing, you know, as players, maybe they can do all this. Those Albert King licks. You know, which can take you, that's hours and hours and hours and hours of learning to try to play Albert King style stuff. But that gets the point where if that's what you do every time you pick it up, it's like hearing the same record over and over and over again. You know, so we put, a little added little added thing, twists in there just to keep it fun and interesting.
Dave Leslie from The Baby Animals.
Now, going back to your lead playing, when you first started improvising, so did you pretty much just do that yourself, or your teacher said, hey, try all these things out?
Once I got my head around the pentatonic, I had a couple of sessions with this other guy, Laurie Minson from Tamworth. He's an amazing guitar player too, Aussie guy, does a lot of country stuff. And he just taught me, in bends and a few sort of things. And once I got the importance of bends and vibrato, and listened to Ian Moss, Kevin Borich, and their vibrato is like to die for, man. And so once you, once you get your head around the big bends, and then that vibrato, kind of the Jeff Becky thing, and then I just went for it and spent hours or years exploring that shape and exploring the possibilities and getting weird, trying to get different sounds and what sounds good and what doesn't, and there's a lot of stuff that doesn't, but there's a lot of stuff that does. And then you realize that you can all, the stuff that doesn't kind of can sound good anyway, depending on what you put after it. But I think it's, I'm really concentrating, I still do nearly on a daily basis, is getting good sounding notes, getting stuff that, just stuff that sounds good, it doesn't have to be that complicated, but it's got to have a big kind of tone about it,
In this episode, I sit down with Marcel Yamuni at his studio, Captain Vive Productions.
I would encourage any young musician to grab a bunch of your mates, get into a garage and play for hours and hours and hours and make that noise, improvise, I mean, it's fun for one thing. I still think that's fun. I don't think I'll ever, that'll ever stop being fun to me. It's the best way to learn as well. It's the best way to learn how to create. And even with songs, like when you're in an original band, like learn the nuances, you know. And I think that's what I did with the bass as well. Like, so it, I didn't sort of, as most guitar players would, I didn't grab a pick and go on a bass straight away. I learned to use my fingers and I explored the various parts of where the right hand should sit. Close to the bridge gets you a nice... tight kind of treblier sound as opposed to up closer near the neck where you get a little bit more warmth and punch and in between, working through all that. I mean, it's the same with a guitar, like it's no different.
We interview someone that is very connected to the music of Kiss since the very start of their career, and that is Mr. Bob Kulick.
Tell us about your first encounter with Gene and Paul.
Well, that would have been when I auditioned for the band back in the day. They put it out in the Village Voice in New York, and this was the place where, for instance, a Lillabelle gig was advertised that I went and auditioned and got. So, band looking for a lead guitar player, went down to their loft, and that was the first time I met them and didn't get the gig, but kept in touch. We'd go to their shows, we'd go hang out with Paul, we'd go over to Gene's place, we became friends. So that's how that really started, was for me auditioning and them like, well, we really love his playing, and then cut to the Kiss Cruise, and there I am back again.
Yeah. So
it's been a kind of a long journey, but here we still are, and that's, I guess, that really tells the story of something that's special.
Leon Todd from the band Ragdoll from Perth, Australia.
How long have you been teaching now for?
Probably 12 years now. I started when I was 16 or 17. I had two or three private students when I was doing that. And the last 5 or 6 years, I do a day at a private school near here, and then I have private students almost every afternoon. So, and like I said, I probably have a roster of maybe 20, 22 students and a bunch of casual students as well, so it's just an ongoing process of refinement and trying to stay on the ball and either listen to new music or just talking to other teachers and figure out new methods and because it's every student is a brand new challenge, and you both have to kind of feed off one another to figure out how you're gonna make progress.
So, yeah, that's right.
I always imagine if I was in that situation taking lessons where it's you show up for a guitar lesson and you're obviously there for a reason. Mm. The first question should always be, so what sort of music do you like?
Yep.
You know? And then that should be the guiding sort of force. Yep. Rather than, oh, it's good that you sign up for guitar, so this is how you do exercise A, book one.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is a really good way to put people off anything, I think. But, yeah. Like I said, for me, it's a very, very rewarding experience. And it's always weird to say that it's a job when you get to play guitar all day and you get to see people, you know, you get to be there for those moments when young people have these revelations, you know, where it's like, oh, I can do this. Or that's how you, watching people become competent is a really nice thing to be a part of.
Doug Pinnick from the band King's X. So anyone listening, my bass player listeners, do you have any tips for them?
You know, for me, bass playing, it's like you have to see somebody play and then you can give them a tip. That's the hardest thing. It's like, for me, it's hard to say. I mean, the biggest tip a bass player ever gave me was use my pinky. You know, going, oh, you know, and did you see, he saw me play with three fingers, even though Chris Squire played with three and not four. You know, but so I start trying, and you know, it's just, I always tell bass players that they control the band. They are the foundation. The drummer keeps the time. They are the foundation, and everybody dances up on top of them. And you have to make your bass lines up where they can dance on top of them. And you have to understand space, not always follow the guitar. Soul music, the bass was the driving thing. Everybody knows when you heard a soul song in the 60s, it was a bass line, always, you know, and then the guitar just came in with the strumming. And nowadays it's turned around and all of a sudden the guitars are the dominant thing and they're the loudest in the mix. And, you know, I mean, literally just the loudest, and they turn the bass down. And I know we were doing a KXM record and the bass wasn't loud enough. And I was telling our engineer that was, Chris, that was mixing it. I says, dude, the bass lines, it's like a piano. It's like the bass lines are a part of the chord. Yeah. I'm doing things to make that chord happen. If you don't bring my bass up, it ain't happening. You know, and that's the biggest thing. And I guess I would say for up-and-coming bass players, number one, don't turn down. I was loud, and our sound man said, Doug, you're too loud. I said, turn the PA up above me. That's what we did.
Yeah.
And we did it for years. I mean, I had 3,000 watts in 6 SVT cabinets, and they were all on. And they were all on. The wall shook with just my rig.
Wow.
And he had to get the drums and guitar and the kick drum and vocals over top of all that. And that was when you saw us.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I was going to say that.
And, you know, and I mean, I there's hardly any bands I go see nowadays you can hear the bass.
Mm.
Back in the 60s, go see Grand Funk. All you heard was bass. You know, I mean, it was like, it was the thing, and it's changed now. So, you know, I don't have a lot of things to say to bass players other than be loud and proud, be your own people, take it back.
Tim Harding, who was one of the original members from the Australian top children's show, High Five. So when you did the High Five with your audition, did you have to play guitar? Was that like a main thing?
I mean, it wasn't necessary. I don't think that was, you know, that they were specifically looking for someone who played guitar.
Yep.
But certainly for me, the biggest advantage that had was that it was something I was really used to doing. I was used to playing guitar, accompanying myself when I sang.
Yep.
So, but I was able to then go into the audition and just sit there and play on the guitar and sing along, meant that vocal audition, I felt really comfortable and really relaxed and able to do.
Yeah.
So when I had back audition, I had to sing to somebody else playing the piano, and that was far more nerve-wracking. So I'm sure that it made a big difference, just for me psychologically. But no, I think the producers really felt that the fact that I was a musician was a good thing, and obviously when I went into High Five, I was doing the music segment, and that's really what that had just been my experience as a guitarist. But I also in Compass Mentis, I've been sort of playing percussion a little bit as well.
Okay.
There was some, you know, bits and pieces that I knew, like I could play the didgeridoo and I could do you know, lots of little bits on instruments, you know, play a few notes on this or that.
Yeah.
So if I picked up the saxophone, I could actually get a note out of it, whereas some people, you know, just could struggle to get anything out of it.
Oh,
so I
sure.
think Billy's felt that that was good to have someone who could do those things.
Timothy Gaines, ex-Striper bass player. Do you have any favorite? Because you do Skype lessons as well, don't you?
I give lessons. Yeah. I'm more of a what I call a coach, a bass coach, versus like a teacher who sits down and we go through, you know, a book or whatever. I try to get with people that are already established, you know, been playing for a while and want to improve something, technique, you know, or maybe they've learned the wrong way, hand positions, or,
yep.
you know, they want something that I guess I have that since I've been playing for a while that I, you know, some kind of knowledge that I can pass on to them and help okay. them improve. And that basically goes with what I experienced, you know, in the 80s. I met and befriended a great player named Jeff Berlin, phenomenal solo artist, and he kind of took me under his wing. We'd have these informal lessons where he'd give me exercises to play, you know, to help me build up my fingering, you know, strengthen my hands and stamina and things like that. So that's kind of where I'm at. You know, I want to kind of pass on that kind of information to people.
Okay.
So everybody can get a book and learn, you know,
yeah.
to read, or I want to go a little bit with a different approach.
Yep. So thank you guys for listening to the podcast, and also thank you again for your support over the last 5 months. Hope you've enjoyed all the podcasts, and please don't forget to go to my website, becomeaguitaristtoday.com, where you can check out all my previous podcasts, some videos of the people that have been on. And also don't forget, if you do want to check out my closed Facebook group, you can check it out for free for 1 month, and there's no contracts, no nothing, just check it out, see if you like it. And then from there, you can go to my website and choose which package you'd like, starting from $2.50 all the way up to $20 for a lifetime membership. Hope you all have a good new year, and I'll see you in 2018. Until then, keep jamming.